Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to SysFi Radio. Today is Monday, May 18th, 2015, and today we have a very special show lined up for you with a very special person who is going to be sharing with us about her work, her life, her lived experiences, and really just touching on some of the things that we deal with here at SysFi, where we look at the human aspects of life and how people are faced with challenges, how they overcome the challenges, and what message or lessons they can share with just the universe in helping others to overcome what they're going through. So I want to thank you for being with us today. Thank you for tuning in. And just remember that you can share the shows with your network and help to get the word out about our guests and the work that they're doing so that others can learn from them. So today my guest is Mrs. Naisha Williams. She is author of her stories, her history told through the eyes of her true self. She's also the chief executive officer at Sacred Davyhood Incorporation and a sexual abuse and suicide attempt survivor. So we have a lot of great things to talk about today as we talk about the topic and her lived experiences. And we just want to say thank you very much to her for being our guest today, for being a part of our radio segment and just helping to bring awareness and provide resources for people who have gone through or are struggling with these challenges. So good day and welcome, Ms. Williams. How are you?
I'm well, and yourself? Thank you for having me.
Good, good. Thank you. I'm good, too. Thank you for being here. And I'd like to just get you to introduce yourself. You know, it's better when you introduce yourself. You're able to do that better than I can. So introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about who you are, and then we can get more into a dialogue about the book and your lived experiences.
Okay. My name is Naisha Williams. I am from Newark, New Jersey. I grew up in a single-parent home for the first 10 years of my life. I've seen a lot of violence. I grew up in an urban community. Sex, drugs, addictions, molestations, rape. I've witnessed everything, and I was also a part of a lot. I danced, I sung since the age of 3, so performing arts was really my escape. I traveled dancing. I went to a performing arts high school, but I got pregnant at the age of 16, and that changed a lot in my life. So that's pretty much it.
Okay, all right, thank you. So you talked about living through and witnessing a lot of these challenges in life. What would you say would be the turning point? You said that getting pregnant at 16 was a turning point for you. How did that become a turning point, and what happened with that?
Well, I had my daughter at the age of 17. I got pregnant at 16. I had her at 17. Once I got pregnant at 16, I stopped dancing. I stopped going to performing arts. I stopped traveling, and I had to not only learn how to focus and take care of myself, I had to learn to take care of a new human being. On top of me having my daughter at 17, I found out that my mother was addicted to drugs. So I was really depressed. I was severely depressed. I didn't know how to take care of myself. I didn't know how to take care of my daughter. And my best friend was no longer my best friend at that time. So I was going from house to house with my daughter. I've been through, you know, the welfare system trying to have shelter to take care of my daughter and myself, and I felt alone. And that really, you know, gave me time to start thinking about who I was and what I wanted to do with my life and what I needed to do to help my daughter out.
Do you think that's something that anyone at that age or a lot of young women today are able to handle, just going through what you went through and seeing the fact that the family and support system that you thought would have been there wasn't there?
It's very difficult. It was difficult for me. And no, I do not think that a 17-year-old would be able to tackle these trials and tribulations effectively at that age, not whatsoever.
What would you say would be the one thing that you took away from that experience of now having a baby at 17 and having to deal with and focus on all these life challenges by yourself? For the young females listening right now, what would you say to them in terms of their life and looking at their life at that age and seeing that they have control over their lives and the choices that they make?
The control is so false. You don't even know who you are at 17. You might think you do. You have control over choosing your outfits. You have control over whether, you want to focus in class or not. But you don't know the real world. You don't know how unforgiving and harsh the world is out there. And I had to learn it through experience. There were times I didn't even know how I was going to purchase a meal, how I was going to pay for my daughter's formula. I went from family members to family members, but people have their own lives, and people might tell you that they're there for you, but when they need to pay your bills, when they need to feed you, when they need to clothe you, in addition to your child, if you were to even think about having a child at such a, young age, they're not there because they have their own lives to worry about. And that's something that I learned. I thought that my friends were going to be there. I thought that my daughter's father was going to be there, and I wound up being alone. I had to do everything and learn how to do everything by myself.
That experience taught you a lot of things. What would you say was the most profound thing you took out of that? We're talking with young ladies, and we're going to get into now the work that you do at, the Devihood
Yes, Sacred
Incorporation.
Divahood.
What would you say is the most profound thing you took from that experience to you now doing what you do with that organization?
I would have to say I began to learn how important I was in that time of going through betrayal and hurt. I had to start digging deep within myself and what made me happy, what did I love doing, and how I never wanted to stop doing that. And it took me a very long time to tap back into performing arts. It took me a very long time to be happy genuinely, and that's why I started Sacred Divahood Incorporation. Through rape and molestation and teenage pregnancy, drugs, gangs, violence, performing arts was my way of expressing myself. That was my way of being free, and I wanted to give that back to the community. I wanted young girls to find a safe haven, to come somewhere that they can be themselves and their age. Right now we have young girls who's rushing to be an adult and have no idea and can only fathom what it is to be a true adult and the responsibilities that we have as adults. So I wanted to give something to our young girls. I wanted to give something to our young girls, teaching them that education is important. Expressing yourself through performing arts is important. Loving who you are, but not trying to find love somewhere else, but genuinely loving you first is very important. And that's what Sacred Divahood Incorporation embodies.
Okay. All right. So thank you for sharing all that from a personal standpoint. Let's look at now taking that lived experience and the personal lived experience of that to now forming this organization. And what does this organization do? Can you talk about that, the organization itself, and introduce it to people so they can know?
Sacred Divahood Incorporation is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that empowers young girls ages 11 through 19. We have homework assistance. We have Skype programs, international interaction with our chapters in Kampala, Uganda. We teach them to speak and express themselves through performing arts. That's singing, dancing, acting, TV and production. We teach them financial literacy, how important it is to understand your investments. What do you want to do out in life? Do you want to become an entrepreneur? How important it is to build your credit and to not, run off and get credit cards and destroy your life before you even begin it. So we're an organization that actually tackles everything, whether it's traumatic or whether it's just continuing on with performing arts for our young girls.
Okay, what age group do you work with?
11 through 19.
Okay. And in working with them, you talk about a lot of the things like life skills, developing financial literacy, overcoming the challenges that they may go through in life. Walk us through a look at what that experience will be. Let's say there's a parent listening, and a parent may have a child who may be in need of some services. Walk us through what that experience would be like for that parent and that child.
So when the parent reaches out to SDI, Sacred Divahood Incorporation, they will reach out to us several different ways. They can contact us through our contact form online that's at www.sacreddivas.org, or they can call our hotline, which is open 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, and that's at 1-530-76-DIVAS. They'll call. They will leave a message. Someone in the organization will get back to them within 15 minutes, and we'll ask them, what is the reason for calling? If this is an emergency, you need a counselor on call to speak with your teenager. Would you like them to be a part of a program? Is it just for homework assistance? Are they dancers already? And for some reason, you cannot financially support and continue on with their dancing program. We come into play. We send them off an application. They complete the application. Once the application is complete, we have someone contact them back, send off a package. Once the package is complete, we find out where they're located, and if there's a chapter in their designated area, we give them the instructions, and they head over to the chapter, and we start the program right then and there. We do not ask for any money. There's no application fee. Everything is fully covered.
Okay, and they have to go in to get the service or complete the process.
Yes.
Okay,
Yes, the
and how
application
many
will have to be.
areas? I'm sorry, go ahead.
The application will have to be completed first, and once the application is done, we move from there.
Okay, and how many areas would you say you guys are operating in right now? Just give me an idea of some of the areas, just for those who are listening, so that they can know that this may be available in an area near them or a state near them.
We are in New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, Georgia, Maryland, Texas, California, Kampala, Uganda, Arkansas, and we are opening up in Ohio starting next month.
Okay, great. Well, sounds like there's a lot of great things coming out of this effort and being able to touch the lives of people in great ways, especially when we look at the fact that there are so many of our youth who are out here in our streets and the communities with no support. They're dealing with a lot of life challenges and no one to help them through those challenges. And many of them are lacking that family support.
Yes.
So it's great
Yes.
that you're doing that, and I commend you on doing that.
Thank you so very much. Thank you very much. I
So
just, you
you
know,
should go ahead.
I feel that it's really important. Coming from, I feel like I was once that child. And if I had someone to, bring me under their wing to actually speak the truth to me and to show me that love. There's a lot of things that I would have done differently, and that's why I'm here. I mean, my telephone, it rings all the time. I do not shut it off. I am always here. My schedule is open because this is something that I truly believe in.
But your belief from that and why you're doing that and the passion of doing that comes from your lived experiences,
Exactly. Exactly.
which is not something most people are going to be open to on the level that you are, because they've never experienced it. Which now brings me to talking about the personal experiences that you've gone through with the sexual abuse and the suicide attempt.
Well, at the age of 12, I was raped and molested by two men on the same night. The first man was a friend of a family member, and it happened in the car parked outside of my aunt's house. And it's crazy to me because while it was going on, there were several people outside of the car. No one came inside the car. You know, sometimes I think, like, well, maybe I should have tapped harder on the glass. Maybe I should have screamed louder. But it happened inside of a car. When I was actually able to get away from this man, about 3 hours later, my cousin woke me up out of my bed and had me come inside the living room. And that was the first time I actually seen the sun come up, because I had to stay up with him until about 7:30 the next morning. And it was going on throughout the night. And I never told anyone. I didn't tell anyone until the age of 17, actually. I was coming out of the supermarket and I smelled the young man who did this to me that day, and I broke down. This happened to me in South Carolina, and I broke down in New Jersey. And I knew this guy wasn't behind me. I knew he wasn't around me, but I also knew that it was time to tell my story. And I went home and told my mother.
Well, what was the reaction or response to that?
Just shocked because I didn't tell, but I didn't tell because I didn't think anything was going to happen. You know, what was she going to do? I didn't want to go to this location. This was, you know, I didn't want to go to this home. I was forced to go to this home because, you know, I was forced to be inside this family. It was my stepfather's family, actually. And, you know, when I told her, you know, she cried. But then I later on found out that there was really not much she can do because she was also a victim growing up. So if she hasn't, you know, if she didn't deal with her, how could she possibly deal with me?
And did your experience change anything for her? And did your experience change anything for the family? What was the follow through on that?
Nothing. Nothing changed. We really didn't even talk about it much after, you know, I came out and spoke about it. My stepfather, I'm still not sure to this day if he's even contacted anyone in the family, but, you know, it was over. The first day we talked about it was pretty much the last day we spoke about it.
Wow. Do you think that's something, now that you have an organization working with a lot of these young women, are you hearing a lot of that, seeing a lot of that, where many of them have been abused, violated, and have not been able to talk about it, share it, or even if they've shared it, has made life worse for them?
Oh, yes, of course. 69% of incidences of teen sexual abuse occur in the residence. And, you know, sometimes we have this thing of whatever happens in the house stays in the house. You don't talk about it, you don't bring it up anymore, and that's the end. And that is wrong. That should not happen. You know, a lot of times this is going on within the household with family members. But, you know, the victims don't want to say anything because they don't want their family to be upset. They don't want to lose a friend. They don't want, you know, the abuser to be upset at them for whatever reason. This happens often. And inside the organization, the majority of my young girls that come in is happening from the stepfathers or the uncles or sometimes even the aunts. But they fear of saying anything because of someone being upset or they're telling their business. And it's insane to me.
So how do we break that cycle? You're seeing it, it's coming in, you're hearing it, you're around, you know, these young women who have experienced it, are going through it. How do we break the cycle as a society when we're so afraid to talk about these type of realities? I know we do have some cases where the young woman was actually put out of the home because the mother, you know, thought that she was lying because she was saying that the molestation was by the boyfriend, and so the mother put the child out because of that. And now we even see it within some of the same-sex relationships where it's a same-sex relationship and the child is caught in the middle of that. You know, how do we deal with that as a society if we're so afraid to talk about it?
I say it's one person at a time, and I believe that that's why my story is so important. That's why I have no issue with speaking about what happened to me, because hopefully when someone else hears it, they will then hear that how important their story is. We have to speak on it. We have to speak about it, not even worrying about if this person is going to be upset, because sometimes that same mother that kicked her daughter out because she did not believe, you know, the daughter over the step over the boyfriend, she believed them, but she probably went through it. There's a generational curse that's going on. There's, you know, mothers who's been molested by their fathers, and then their fathers was molested by their fathers. This is going on over and over and over again. So someone has to talk, and someone has to talk now.
I'm with you on that, and I agree with you 100%. But there's also another dynamic that I think we need to factor in. And, I mean, I'm sure you and I all are seeing it the same, where as a society, we have to welcome the idea and be more receptive to the idea that family is not just about blood. It's not just about being born or material, maternal connection to people. Family is now that society that wants to and cares about the well-being and development, healthy well-being and development of an individual. Do you see a growing trend with a lot of young people today who are in need of that family love and support but are not getting it, and therefore they've become hurt and broken and struggling?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And it's not only with our young girls, it's also with our young men. You know, our people get upset at these young men that's running to gangs, and how can you, you know, be a part of a certain gang? But they do this. They do this to run to what they believe is love and what they believe is brotherhood or support. They don't know where they should go. They want to go to the nearest place. Do I feel like I'm accepted? Do I feel like I'm loved? And that's where they run into the arms. And some may, you know, this is dangerous. But where else are these young girls and these young boys going to go? It has to start at home.
Well, I tell you what, it's one of those things where you and I right now are talking on a three-dimensional level. What I mean by three-dimensional, I mean the fact that, one, we've lived through this, two, we're now working with it, and three, we will work at a societal level where we also see how society plays into it. What I find to be disturbing for me is the fact that you have a lot of people who, because they have not gone through an experience or lived through it, to them, it's not a problem. And so when you try to have certain conversations with them to say, you know, that this is what's happening and you know, this is really affecting so many people, to them, it's like, oh, well, okay. But they don't see the need. Right. They don't see the need to be a part of raising the awareness or even supporting someone in crisis because it has not directly affected them.
Yes.
So that's one of the other dynamics that we're facing a lot of times, too, when looking at the efforts to break the stigmas and change the way services are provided for people, and also to educate, re-educate a lot of healthcare and mental health professionals in a lot of these human conditions, because I do think that there are many of us who are in positions as a career, but not from the lived experience, and so we can't even connect with people on a level to feel what they're feeling or even be empathetic to them.
I agree 100%.
So you talked about the sexual abuse. I know that you also talked about in our conversation off the air that about the suicide attempts. Can you share? Are you willing to share and talk about that?
I mean, I will. I can share one attempt. I was 14 years old, and I was inside the house with my mom, and my mom was in the kitchen on a telephone, and she was cooking. And, you know, I was done. I was so hurt. I wasn't loving myself. I didn't like how things were going in my household, how things were going in school. And I knew she was on the phone, so she was distracted. And I grabbed a butcher knife, and I sat down at the kitchen table. And I'm doing all of this because all I want is her attention. That's all I wanted. And I grabbed a butcher knife, and while she was cooking, I walked up to her, and I, like, slit my wrist. You know, and it wasn't even so deep. It wasn't deep at all, but I did it. And, you know, that was me crying out. I cried out. No, I really did not want to leave this earth. I just wanted my mother. That was it. And if I had to do that, if I had to take my life in order to grab her attention, that's what I was willing to do. And that's what I did at the age of 14.
And with that experience, do you see that as something that is happening with a lot of young people that you're working with, that you've talked with, in terms of the fact that they're looking for that attention and that support from a parent, but because they can't have that or handle the need, they're turning to self-harm and self-injury?
Yes. Yes. I haven't heard anything else besides them wanting or needing the love from their family. That's it. You know, the mom isn't in the picture, or the dad isn't in the picture, or you have these young girls raising their siblings, and they're trying to also make sure that they're getting good grades in school. But how could they do that? Because now they're a mother, and they have a huge responsibility. So now they're, you know, what else am I going to do with myself? I can't disappoint anyone, so I'm just going to go ahead and bring harm to myself. It's either me or someone else. And a lot of times these young girls that come in, they're telling me, you know, Mrs. Williams, I just rather, you know, kill myself or harm myself, because then if I'm taken out of the loop, maybe it'll be easier for the rest of the family if I'm gone. And it's sad.
It is. It truly is. And I think the thing that scares me the most is they do it consciously. You know, a lot of times people say, oh, they don't know what they're doing. They don't understand what they're doing. Yes, they do. And they do understand, just like we need to understand that the need that they have for that love and attention from that parent is real. And, you know, it's so scary when you try to have a conversation with parent, because we can't share and disclose privacy when we talk with a child and a child, the way a child is feeling, because, you know, this it's a trust issue. Mm-hmm. Our children today have real serious trust issues when it comes to talking with people, because they don't feel like they are given the opportunity to open up and share how they're feeling. And then when they do that, they feel like, okay, you know what, it's held against me. Now I can't even trust talking with someone about it. It now goes back to my parents, and it goes back to now I'm in trouble, my parents. So it's a lot of things that are coming at our children, our youth. And sometimes we try to educate the parents on how to communicate, how to support their child. And I remember one mother telling me, she said, if my child ever attempted to take their life or told me that they're going to take their life, I would beat the life out of the child. And I said to myself, wow. And then you wonder why so many of our youth really don't want to and feel choked up about the fact that they can't get any help or support.
Yep.
So with the program that you have and what you're doing, which is a beautiful thing, that is great in helping to deal with a lot of these issues. And we want to just continue, you know, to promote and support the work that's being done, because it's so badly needed. It is so badly needed. And the fact that you've lived through it and experienced it for yourself, you know, in a sense, is a good and bad thing. It's bad that you went through that. I'm sorry you had to go through that, but the good side of that is you are able to take that pain, make it into a purpose that you're now putting into action to do and help the lives of so many others.
And, you know, it's good that you said that. I was asked one day, if you had to change something in your life, what would you change? And I said, nothing. And do you have any regrets? None, because it took me to go through what I went through in order for me to get here. I had to get here. I had to begin this organization. I had to write this book. You know, so no, I wouldn't. I wouldn't change nothing. No, when I was going through it, I did not want it to continue. But I did it. I went through it, and now I'm here, and now I'm willing to help any and everybody that needs it. So I wouldn't change anything, not one bit.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that. So, and then you touched on the book. So here we are. Let's talk about the book. Her story.
Yes.
Is it about you, your story? I mean, tell us about the book. I'm very excited to hear about the book.
Her stories, her history told through the eyes of her true self, is all biographical. The book is filled with short stories, confessions, poems, everything that has happened in my life, I pretty much shared with the reader. It's in three parts. So the first part is considered naked, and that's me coming out telling you what has happened with my life without any fear or being embarrassed about what's going on. And then the second, I'm going through transformation. When did I decide, or how did I decide to begin to change myself? What did I have to do? And later on inside the book, it's more of the connection where the reader becomes the writer, because the book is interactive. So what I wanted to do was I wanted to build these relationships with people that's reading the book. So I'm going to come out and I'm going to tell you something about myself. And whatever feeling it evokes, I need you to tell me, well, write down what it is. If you hate me, if you can't stand me, if you think I was disgusting, if you went through a similar situation, I want you to write it down, because I know that that's therapeutic. And I'm doing this because I'm hoping that more people will come out and tell their story. And it's working. It's really working. So I'm so happy about that.
Okay, great. I'm happy for you too. When you said it's working, what does that mean? What does that look like?
I have received so many phone calls, Facebook inboxes, emails, messages from Twitter, you know, young women, older women, and men, you know, they come out and they say thank you. Thank you for being open and honest about your life, because now I want to start telling people about my life. I want to reach out to my mother. I want to reach out to my daughter and apologize. You know, they feel like they're not alone now. If you're willing to be as blunt and honest about your life and you've gotten this far, maybe I can do the same thing. So now people are talking. People are trying to build broken relationships. People are, you know, fathers that was not in their daughter's lives are now trying to reach out to their daughters and apologize to try to build a relationship that was not built before. So this is what I mean by it's working. This is allowing people to write in their journal, but with someone else.
And that's beautiful. And
thank you.
And that was what you intended to happen in writing the book? Is that what you
yes.
envisioned that would have happened? So is basically
yes.
is the manifestation. Okay, great.
Yes.
That's great.
Thank
so,
you.
So
Thank you.
So the book is available. Can you just talk about how people can find out about the book, where they can get it, you know, just share
yes.
it with people so they can know.
The book is on Amazon and Craigslist, but if you would head over to my website, which is NyeshaWilliams.com, that's NyeshaWilliams.com, you have access to the organization. You have access to purchase the book. You also have access to my tour dates, which will begin in July, where I'll be setting up in different locations across the world, speaking to, you know, young women and men about her stories, why I wrote her stories, and how we have a responsibility as a community to begin to tell our stories.
Okay, great. And what's the timeline for that?
You can go on NyeshaWilliams.com, and you'll receive the book about a week. My tour begins in July, July 24th. I'll be in New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania, and then I head off to Maryland, Georgia, and then Midwest, and then back to the West Coast.
Okay. Wow. Well, listen, I'm very happy and very excited for you. I'm actually very honored to have you on with us today to share that, because, again, You know, the work that you're doing is very important. And what we try to do here at CISFI is try to promote. We have a very extensive network of listeners because of the type of work that we do and the levels that we do work on. And so we have a lot of people who are always listening to connect, who are looking for resources, who are looking for inspiration, who are just out there going through different things and just wanting to hear, you know, someone talk about something they're going through that they may be able to connect with and feel that connection with. So I'm grateful and happy to have you with us today and to share that. So share that contact information and the website again. So that way, if anyone is interested, your contact information, the website, if someone is listening, how can they make contact with you if they're interested, you know, like that?
If someone is interested, they can contact me through the website. The website is, again, NyeshaWilliams.com. That's NyeshaWilliams.com. You have access to the book. There's a contact form in which will come to me directly, and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. My telephone number is on the website. You have access to the organization. The application for the organization for young girls is on the application as well. My social media handles is Nyesha D. So that's Twitter and Instagram. And that's NyeshaD and the letter D. Nyesha D on all social handles.
All right, great, great. We're going to take an opportunity right now just to invite anyone who is listening in, if you'd like to, you know, talk with Ms. Nyesha for a minute or just share some encouragement or ask her a question, please press 1 on your keypad and we'll bring you on the air so you can talk with her for a minute before we wrap up. Again, we want you to know of the great work that she's doing. We want you to know where she's available, how you can engage with her, but also to take this archive and to share it with your network so that others can learn about the organization. You heard about the great things that she's doing. Many people may not be aware of or hear of or have heard about it. And so in you sharing it and getting it out to your network, you never know whose life you may touch with that information for that person to now know about her and the organization. So please share the archive of the interview today so that others can learn of and benefit from it. And if there is no one, Ms. Nyesha, do you want to, let's see, we don't have anyone who has come into the queue that they want to be on the air. All right, do you have any last words that you want to share, anything you want to share to wrap up with?
I just would like to say that everyone that's listening, you are not alone. You may feel that you are, but there's always someone who has went through a similar situation. And if you just come out, and if you need me to speak to, you know, to gain help you gain some strength, I'm here, and you can contact me through any handle, my email, website. I'll help you get through it, but your story is very, very, very important.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Mrs. Williams. Thank you so much. It was an enlightening conversation, you know, just learning more about you and the great things that you're doing. And, you know, we will definitely invite you to be back on with us. Sometimes we do have panel discussions on abuse, domestic violence, suicide, depression, mental health, and so on. We definitely try to get people who have lived the experience who can talk about it. So we'll definitely, you know, invite you back to be on with us for a panel discussion that we have coming up on, you know, mental health and depression, and really just get you to also share not only from your experiences, but also the work that you're doing with your organization, because we do know that there are a lot of young women out here that are in really, really in need of such services. So I want to thank you for what you do. And, you know, as you said, if you had a chance to live your life again, would you change anything? No, because you know what? No. It got you to where you are today and doing the great things that you are doing. So congratulations. Keep
Thank
up
you.
The great work. And God
Thank
bless.
You. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. I look forward to speaking with you soon.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. Mrs. Naisha Williams, she gave her contact information. She gave you her website. She gave you her number, where you can reach her, how you can reach her, and just be able to connect with her. Feel free to reach out to her as needed. She has made herself available as a resource, and that way you can tap into the network that she has also in doing the work that she does. Again, thank you all for joining. Have a great day, and God bless. This is Brett Scudder here at SysFi, tuning out for another great show and interview today.